Support for this episode comes from Signature Bank.
Hey, this is Gary Head at Signature Bank of Arkansas. 20 years ago, we set out to build something different, a community bank that knows your name, values relationships, and gives our bankers the authority to serve you the way that you deserve. From our first location in Fayetteville to now serving families, farms, and businesses across Bentonville, Rogers, Springdale, Harrison, Brinkley, and Jonesboro, we've grown, but our mission remains the same. Local, personal, trusted. With 210 passionate teammates and growing, we're proud to serve all of our communities, including through Banco C, our bilingual banking services in Rogers and Springdale. Whether you're starting your own business, buying a home, or planning for the future, Signature Bank is here for you. Call us today at 479-684-3700 or visit us online at signature.bank. And be sure to tell us you heard about us right here on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
Searching for local businesses in Northwest Arkansas just got easier. From restaurants to roofers, boutiques to baristas, finditnwa.com connects you to the best local businesses with just one click. Discover something local, something great. Visit finditnwa.com today. Find it fast, find it local, finditnwa.com.
Today on I Am Northwest Arkansas, we're joined by Tom Hapgood, a cornerstone of the University of Arkansas's graphic design program and author of a compelling new book on military children's experiences during the Cold War. Tom brings over two decades of experience shaping the next generation of design professionals in our region while carrying a unique perspective formed during his years in Cold War Germany. His story weaves together international experience, academic leadership, and creative innovation, exemplifying the diverse talents that make Northwest Arkansas an increasingly vibrant creative hub. Stay tuned for the whole story.
It's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Here's our host, Randy Wilbur.
Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. I'm your host, Randy Wilbur, and I'm excited to be with you as always. We've got a great episode for you. And you know, I say a lot that I love serendipity and I love just connecting with people by accident or when somebody reaches out to me and says, hey, you should have so-and-so on your podcast or you should have so-and-so on your podcast. And by the way, I just want to put it out there that I've created a new link on my website. And if you go to the site, iamnorthwestarkansas.com, you can actually suggest a future guest for the podcast. Now, doesn't mean I'm going to have them on, but if you think highly about someone, it could be yourself, but technically I'd love for you to nominate somebody else that you think has an amazing story that needs to be told on this platform. I'd love to hear from you. So please visit www.iamnorthwestarkansas.com and then click on the About section, and that will bring you down on the menu there, and you can choose to recommend a guest. And there's a little form you can fill out. You have to fill out the form completely. We will get that information. We'll acknowledge that you sent it. And then we'll get in touch with you once we've talked to this individual and made a decision about having them on the podcast. But we want to continue to grow what we've been doing here for the past, as at the time of recording this, over 6 years. You know, again, I created this podcast because it was the one I would have wanted to listen to when I first moved here, but it didn't exist. So I created it. And here we are now, 6 years later. Every Monday, a brand new episode. And so I'm excited to have Tom Hapgood on the podcast today to have a real conversation. And one of the things that really excites me about this conversation is I actually spent some time in Germany growing up. Not a lot of time. I think I've mentioned on this podcast before that a couple of my father's siblings were born in Germany. My father lived in Germany during World War II because my grandfather served over there. And, you know, we've used the expression army brat, but that's, you know, it was the kind of thing where he just had a unique experience. And I think because of my father's experience in Germany, It actually gave me a love for the country, for the people, for the language. So I studied German in high school. I minored in German in college. And so I spent a fair amount of time really taking in the German language, the German people, the German art. Goethe has been one of my favorite writers. You know, the list goes on and on. But suffice it to say, I was really excited about the potential of this conversation that we're about to have right now. And so I don't want to hype it up too much, Tom, but welcome to the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks, Randy, to be in this room with Randy Wilburn. This is exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, so we're going to talk about a lot. And oh, by the way, Tom is he's not even an aspiring author. He is an author. I am physically holding in my hand his book, Lost Letters, which I highly recommend that you guys get, but he'll talk more about it in a little bit. He actually gave me a signed copy and he has the coolest signature that I've seen in a long time. So, but I shouldn't be surprised coming from a design professional. So I get that. You know, you major in the minors when it comes to even doing the little things well.
You know, I created that signature just for this new author lifestyle. My old one was terrible, so I created a new great one.
It looks like it might be faster too.
So, yeah, it's just TH.
Just a little bit. That's cool. Well, listen, Tom, why don't you just give us and we always like to ask for people's, you know, superhero origin story, but why don't you give us just a little bit of background about yourself and how you ended up here in Northwest Arkansas?
Okay, great. So I'm from New England originally, outside of Boston. The Hapgoods have been there since 1656. And we lived
there. It's a long time.
It's a long
time. Like Plymouth Rock time.
And then my dad worked with the Army.
Okay.
And so he was a lieutenant colonel and then worked as a civilian with the Army. And then we got transferred out to Fort Huachuca, Arizona in 1980. Fort We Gotcha, they call it. And lived there for a few years. And then ultimately we were transferred over to Germany. And at the time it was West Germany. So that's where kind of the origin of this book comes from, is my time over there as a high schooler and kind of, you know, so I was basically living in a tiny little desert, dusty town in Arizona, plucked up, dropped into the center of Western Europe in the 80s and changed my life completely.
99 Luftballons.
That's it. Nana.
Nana.
Yeah.
That was a big song.
You even
back
said
in
the German
day.
Title.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. So it's, I used to sing that song by heart. And I remember when that you and I kind of both were contemporaries in terms of when we were growing up in the 80s, MTV was all there was. And so I can only imagine what it was like. But when I saw Nana's video, I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So
I think it actually ends a nuclear war, doesn't it?
Something it does. Like it really does. So yeah, it was kind of prophetic, if you will. But yeah, it's very interesting times. Really, really, I love movies that relate back to that Cold War period between the dichotomy between East Germany and West Germany. Just such a stark difference. And I remember going to Berlin and just looking across the demilitarized zone and just like, oh my gosh, it's almost like, it's hard to describe, but maybe you've seen movies or an image where one side is full color and the other side is black and white. And that's kind of the presence and the way that it existed.
So
it's hard to explain.
Yeah. And we got to travel to play sports. I played soccer and tennis. And so we would get on a train in West Germany. We would travel through the night, through East Germany, into West Berlin. Of course, you pass through Checkpoint Alpha, Checkpoint Bravo. And if you kept going, there'd be the famous Checkpoint Charlie. But we would play tennis, football, soccer, whatever there, get on the train, head back through the night, windows, you know, covered, weren't allowed to look out at East Germany. It was, you know, the Soviet guards would come on the train with their AK-47s and the German shepherds. And I mean, it was a
super
serious deal.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a blast, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I will, for those, if you are a James Bond fan, the movie Octopussy came out in 1983. And that movie features West Germany and East Germany prominently. And I was a huge James Bond fan growing up. And that was around the time when I went to Germany. And so that was my first introduction. And I just remember that very distinctly. So not only did I see it play out on film, but I also saw it in real life. And I was like, wow, this is what you see is what you get. So
for sure. You know, there's a movie called Gotcha.
Yeah.
With Goose from Top Gun. What was his name?
Absolutely.
Anthony Edwards. Yeah. Anyway, if you want to sort of get a sense, it's a comedy, but get a sense of the East-West tension and situation.
Yeah.
Days, that's a great, great one to watch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, all right. So you got there, you spent time there. What was, for you, what was it like being, experiencing, you know, beyond just the trips to into West Berlin, what was it like being, you know, in a foreign country as a young person?
There's a term for it that people in that situation are called third culture kids. And they're the people, so we're Americans and we're living in a foreign country and we sort of don't feel like complete member of either in a way. So there's this third culture in the middle where the term comes from. And it's interesting because we're using dollars, we're driving American cars, we're gassing up in the same way, eating frozen burritos, going to the movies, bowling, all that. But it's this sort of little island community in the center of these German cities. And there were, you know, hundreds of thousands of American troops and families living in Germany and other places during the Cold War. And so it was interesting. And thankfully, my parents were very much interested in travel and getting to experience it. There were some people who would just sort of hide in their apartments and wait out this experience
time,
of the time.
They didn't embrace it.
They didn't, but every weekend we'd go out and travel and just go to really interesting places.
And that's the thing about, you know, what I really enjoyed about, and, you know, and I did live in Germany when I was in college. I went over to study Gothic and Romanesque architecture, and I spent most of my time in Süddeutschland, or Southern Germany. Mm. So like Bavaria, kind of like Munich, Regensburg, Rothenburg, Ob der Tauber, Pforzheim, Tübingen, all those areas there. But I spent a lot of time there. And the one thing I do really remember and appreciate is that literally I could just go into the city center, get on the Bahnhof, get on the train and go anywhere. You know, I remember taking the Orient Express down to Paris. I mean, you could just about do anything. And the connectivity that people experience, I don't think you can really appreciate it until you're there and you realize how connected. You're like, Austria is like right there. Belgium is right there. And France is right. I mean, everything is right there. So I don't think you understand it. I mean, you've seen movies about war and about what happened during World War II, but you can't appreciate how closely connected all of these countries were. And I just think that I find that fascinating.
Oh, it was great. Weekends were amazing, you know.
And you mentioned
a minute ago the phrase brat, the military brat.
And
that's actually a phrase that we kind of embrace because it supposedly means British regiment attached to traveler.
Yeah.
Right. But it may be one of those backronyms where they just sort of assign something onto, you know, it's not a real acronym. And there's this move to change it from brat to mill kids.
Okay.
And none of us are really excited about brat.
No.
You know, we embrace. Of course, it doesn't have anything to do with our behavior because we were angels, I'm sure.
Sure.
You know, it's just an acronym.
Yeah, that's awesome. So that has how many years were you over there?
Five, 85 to 90.
Wow. So that was a formative time of your life.
Right.
Yeah. What do you think you brought back with you from that time there?
Oh, you know, I teach here at the university and I tell my students to go travel, go out there, get out into the world, go live abroad, because what you're going to do is you're going to see what's so great about those other countries. And you're also going to see what's so great about this country. And so I came back with just an appreciation of all the cultures I experienced over there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, just being, you know, in this great country too. So it's a sort of a mix.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I always find it interesting, and especially in the age, in the time that we're in right now, that a lot of times there's just a little bit of an unknown factor when you haven't traveled. And so you only know what you hear as opposed to what you physically see or experience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And for me, that's just always been the case. And that's why I always tell people, and I was amazed. I've experienced this in other places where I've gone, like I lived in Boston. As you said, you grew up in New England and, you know, and you would appreciate this, but I met people from Southie that had never been to other parts of Boston, literally never left Southie. And Southie's not that big, but, you know, and people know Southie from Good Will Hunting and how it's been shown in The Departed and several other, you know, really good movies about, you know, living in Boston. But, you know, I was always amazed at that. But I had experienced that in other places, too. Like when I had gone to when I lived in the Bay Area and I had hung out and, you know, mentored some kids from like Bayview Hunters Point, which was like a really rough section of San Francisco. And these kids had never been across the bridge into Oakland. They had never been across the Golden Gate Bridge into Marin. And I mean, literally, you could see the bridge from where they lived. And it's like, you know, it's almost like sometimes we don't, you know, we don't realize what's just beyond that, what's right in front of us.
Right.
And I think it's important for all of us to get out and experience life and especially experience other places, cultures and people, because then you get to really appreciate, you know, how big of a great big world we have.
It's really one of the secrets, I think, of life is just getting out there, meeting people, and suddenly you get along.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting. And And you mentioned Pforzheim a minute ago. I lived right near Pforzheim, which is near Karlsruhe, where I grew up for those 5 years. And I attended a Monsters of Rock concert. This is my memory of Pforzheim. Nobody knows the name Pforzheim, but you just said that. Yeah. I can't believe it. But I was at all-day festival, heavy metal days, 1980s. I mean, everybody, Deep Purple was the headliners, you know, whatever, all these other bands. It was interesting. And, you know, so it was half the crowd was American soldiers. And the other half was Germans. And so that mix and everybody sort of pushing each other and jumping around. And it was, those were different days.
I can imagine. You know? I can imagine.
Living the stable professor life in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
It's a lot different.
Yeah.
It's a lot different.
It's almost like a different life. I can't.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I'm doing through the writing is just trying to kind of rediscover the past, time travel.
Sure.
And I had a blast writing the book. So that was scratching the itch of the old days.
Yeah. So how did you find a love for design? I mean, where can you see the genesis of that from your time in Germany, or was it something that kind of came about after that?
I was exposed to so much. I mean, we used to go down into the downtown of the cities, and don't tell anybody, but we used to steal posters off the wall of, you know, the Communist Party rallies and concerts and just all the. And so I kept all these posters.
You still have some of them?
Posters. I do. I have them up in my office even. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, there's that. And then just the museums and the sort of the foods and the castles and the trains and the whole thing just sort of seeped into me. And it's in there.
Yeah.
And so in 2020, I went on a sabbatical, and I guess a lot of us sort of did, but I went on a sabbatical and started writing my memoir. Mm-hmm. And as I'm writing my memoir of those years, I thought, you know, there's a novel in this. There's probably 20 novels in this. And so that kind of took me to where the book is now. And it was an amazing time that I just wanted to capture. And so I hope I did. You know, I've been handing out the book to people saying, yeah, I hope it's good.
I
don't know.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. And I was going to wait to ask you, but since you already brought that up, I figure I'll bring it up now. Because I've always had this hypothesis that we all have a book in us.
Yeah.
Not all of us write it. Mm-hmm. And some of us go to our grave with that book still in us.
Right.
You know, and I'm not trying to be morbid here, but it is the reality that we all have some great stories to share and to tell. And, you know, for those of you listening, you know, my encouragement is sometimes you have to get out of the boat and you have to just have faith that what you have to share is worth somebody else having it and having, you know, being impacted by it.
Yeah.
Because you just never know.
Yeah. And they say that, you know, if you're strong in either the storytelling or the writing, you want to be stronger in the storytelling because someone can help you with
Absolutely.
The writing.
Yeah.
And you can be a really good writer and not a good storyteller. So everyone's got that story in them. And so with some assistance, you know, and I think 80% of people say they want to write a book.
It's high.
It could be
the
more.
The number's high. Yeah. So and just for, I'm going to just put this out here because I always like additional pressure because people that know that I've been wanting to write a book or had plans to write a book always ask me, when's that book coming out?
Right.
And I give everybody license to do that. It won't hurt my feelings. It's just like, I got to get this book out. And I actually have a writing coach and everything. So it's not like I've gone the route. I thought I was going to be able to get it done during the pandemic. Just didn't happen. And sometimes life just gets in the way. But that's also an excuse too, right? Because life is always going to be in the way, even when you're writing a book. And so it's like, I've read Stephen King's book on writing.
Yeah,
it's
called
On Writing.
Times.
It's a great book. Highly recommend it. For anybody that wants to write, get that book. Because I'm not a huge Stephen King fan as a writer, as you know, in his books.
Right.
I mean, Carrie, a few others, but I mean, this dude really captures the essence of what it means to be a writer.
He does. And I think one of the interesting things is everybody needs to find their system for writing because some days you don't feel like it, some days you do. And so he would apparently put on one heavy metal song on loop for hours, that one song over and over. And
that would drive me crazy personally.
I've tried it with heavy metal and other things. And, you know, I get in a few loops, get through a few playings of it and I just can't
hard.
Do it. So, but that's his system.
Yeah.
And from that we get, you know, the sort of monsters and all the creatures.
Well, you know, and it's funny because like all of, I mean, J.R.R. Tolkien, so many other writers, I mean, a lot of writers get help from other writers, right? Tolkien was part of a group with C.S. Lewis and several others. And, you know, they actually egged each other on and encouraged each other when they were going through challenges. Because Tolkien talks famously about the challenges he had with Lord of the Rings. And I mean, you know, we read it now. And we're like, oh, this is amazing. It's like you just don't know the blood, sweat, and tears behind the words on a page and what it takes to birth those things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And I can't even tell you how excited people have been. I've been writing the book for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's asking me about it.
Yeah.
Everyone's sort of wondering when it's coming out.
Right.
And all kinds of – it's funny because if I was doing something else, I almost feel like – you know, if I was making a film, people would be like, oh, that sounds weird. How are you going to make – but a book is totally accessible and possible for one person with a laptop. So – but the energy's been – incredible around it.
And that's exciting.
Had a little launch party the other night, had a lot of people there and the energy was amazing. And, you know, it's been fun. It's been really, and I could do this. And they say on your 8th published book, you can start to make a living at it.
Right. So, 7 you know, more to go.
Yeah. I'm so, still a professor over there. Love it.
That's and, it. That's yeah. it. No, I love that. I mean, you know, and that was, you know, selfishly, that was another reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast is because I was hoping to maybe gin up some encouragement.
Yeah.
Just by hearing what you have to share, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've always said this, no man or woman is an island unto themselves. And I think that, you know, we do have to kind of, you know, go off of each other and feed off of what each other is doing. And so I've had several friends that I had mentioned about one to you before, but the same friend that I mentioned that went to BYU in Idaho wrote a book called Sell It Like a Mango because he's in sales.
Okay.
And it took him forever to get this book out, but he finally got it out. And it has been a game changer for him, not just professionally, but personally. You know, that was his hill that he had to overcome. And it really changed everything for him.
I've started a few, you know, a monograph on a topic, you know, typography or something. But I think novel writing is where I really find my passion.
Yeah.
Again, I think I'm searching for time travel. My little process of writing is, I get myself back into that time and that mindset. I put on the headphones, play the music of the era, and just it's at night usually when everybody's sort of settled and I stay up too late but I just find myself writing really well with the music of the time, pretending I'm there, and it just kind of flows. There's times when it doesn't flow, but that I think is my maybe Stephen King method is still involves music and headphones and various things, but I wish, you know, they all say, get up early and write. And I'm just not an early morning person.
Well, Isaac Asimov, that was his thing, his claim to fame. And a lot of authors, you know, and Asimov said, you know, I would just get up and write. A lot of it would just be garbage, but I would just write. And he would write from like 7 to 12 every day, like 5 hours. That's a lot of writing. So these are like people that I'm using air quotes now, professionally write. But he said more of it was garbage than anything, but it was the act of doing it every day that forced out the things that he really had to share.
You know, I totally believe that. Joan Didion said, I don't know what I think about something until I write about it.
Yeah.
And through the writing is how I do my thinking, I guess.
Yeah.
I think everyone should write, even just for themselves.
What do you think, or what are your concerns? Because I have some thoughts about how AI is going to impact our society and even take away that creative space that we hold for ideas and thoughts, right? Because now all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, AI can do this or AI can do that. I even catch myself sometimes where I'm like, I'm going to write some things first, then I'll refer to AI for other things. And so how do you see that playing into this? Because you wrote this book probably before ChatGPT was really hitting it hard, but...
Well, the viewers can't see this, but a cloud has descended on the room right now because I'm like a lot of people. I don't know. I distrust it. We're using it in design and various things. But, you know, I have a very kind of maybe an unwelcome perspective on it where I've been reading. Stephen King says, if you want to be a good writer, you've got to be constantly reading. I've been reading for my whole life. I like crosswords and wordplay and puns and typography, the fonts. I love everything about the written word. And so I feel ownership of it. And I feel like I've put in the time and now I'm able to write. And so I hear people, you know, writing a novel through, you know, very structured prompts into ChatGPT. And I just, it sits wrong with me. I'm going to get hate for this, I know, but I don't love it. I don't understand that. There's a process, a mental process, you know, for the writing for this, especially the research, the forming of the first draft, the editing, the kind of sentence structure, realizing how that's based on all of my experiences from the past, the words I'm using, I'm trying to be clever. I've pieced together phrases and sentences that I've experienced and come across in my life and places I've been. And so there's so much that goes into what comes out of me onto the page. And, you know, for the AI lovers, you know, I should say something like, yeah, there are times when you should use it and you know, and whatever. But I'm at that place where I'm not accepting it yet for creating in the sort of, in the creative arts in certain ways. And again, I know there's a million ways people are using it for the research part or for the editing or whatever. But still, I would just, for me personally, stay with the traditional method to get through the whole process because it's about me learning and growing ultimately.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the robots are going to teach us as much.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, even, you know, like even it's just like for writing, you know, there's something to be said for writing longhand because there is a direct connection between your hand and your brain
right
when you're writing. And so I've tried to spend some time doing that as opposed to just, you know, typing it up every morning. It's so easy just to open up your laptop and start typing, but it's a whole nother thing when you pull out a journal and you really start writing and there is that connectivity that exists there. And so I don't know. I think people have to find what works for them. I mean, who am I to tell them how they should do it? But I just think that I guess my situation and my encouragement is simply everybody's got a book in them. You need to figure out how to get it out of you, whatever it takes to tell that story. Because I mean, as I'm sitting here listening to you, it's like the book that I have in me. I know I actually have a few, but the one that I really want to get out is one that I think is needs to be shared with as many people as possible, because I think too often, you know, we always feel like we're the only ones going through or going through. And that's not really the case. You know?
Right.
You know, it's not. There is a lot of shared experience out there and a lot of people that have been down the roads that you're traveling down right now. And, you know, it's just unfortunately not everybody writes or throws out breadcrumbs for how to get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to throw out some of those breadcrumbs that other people can appreciate and say, yeah, Randy went through this. Oh, I'm going through this now. And he overcame it, so I can too.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think if people, I would encourage people to get a first draft, get some thoughts out onto paper.
Yeah, you absolutely.
Know? And if you're going to use AI in some way, you know, I can't stop you, but there's something about that connection of brain to hand to pencil to paper or keyboard that it can't be replicated in any other way. And I sound like I'm 1,000 years old. I know.
Yeah, no, you know, it's fine.
We're talking
it's
about fine. The Cold War. And,
yeah.
You know, so I'm in a certain spot for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just think, you know, every generation is going to look at it differently. I think my kids, I have kids that are in Gen Z, just at the edge of Gen Z and Gen Alpha. And so, yeah, I think their experiences are going to be totally different.
Yep.
You know, these are digitally native human beings.
Right.
So, yeah, I can only imagine what it's going to be like for them in 20 years, 30 years, having these same conversations you and I are having, but in a different way.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that's interesting. Okay. So we found out that you guys were here before the Mayflower, or just about. You spent time in Germany. How did you end up in Northwest Arkansas?
Right.
Because I know that's what a lot of people are wondering. Well, how did all that happen? And I'd be curious to know, can you share how you got here?
Northwest Arkansas is a dream. We think we won the lottery or something. It's that amazing. We were living in Arizona.
Yep.
It was Thanksgiving. We just finished our graduate degrees. We were in Tucson, went to the University
you
of Arizona.
Wife.
My wife and I.
Okay.
Yep. She received her degree as in a Master of Music and Music Education. And mine was a Master of Fine Arts in Visual Communication. But we were sitting at an intersection, a couple of babies in the back, and it was Thanksgiving, and it was 100 and something degrees. And, you know, I grew up in New England. She had done some mission work in Tennessee and just loves green.
Yeah.
And so we were like, you know, we need to get out of here. So we started putting out applications. I applied all over the country and I got an interview in Arkansas. Neither of us had ever been here.
Wow.
And so, but it just, the position sounded good. And so I traveled here and I knew this was the place.
Really?
I interviewed a couple other places, didn't get those offers. So it, you know, but I didn't feel good about those other places. When we got here, we knew this was the place for us.
Really?
And we were, so it was the Department of Art back then. The department has sort of gone on to grow and become a school. And we're now in that new building down south of campus, the big
beautiful
blocky
building.
White one.
Yeah.
White and
on
glass.
MLK, and, it's down there, right? Almost across from the neighborhood market.
It is.
Yeah.
I feel like I've gotten a new job in a new city moving into that building.
Yeah.
And parking.
Yeah.
It's been incredible.
It is. It is real. It's really, really nice. And it's a sight to behold for sure. So I encourage folks to go down there and take a look at it and see it for yourself. But all right. So you got here almost 20 years ago.
2005 in July.
Okay. Yep. Wow. So it has been 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost. We're getting there.
And so outside of just the verdant qualities of Northwest Arkansas, it's super green here. It's super inviting from that perspective. What was the first thing once you got here that you were like, wow, this is really nice?
Oh, wow. Everything. I mean, there's something about this is, I don't know how this sounds, but the complete visual change between each season really struck me because I kind of remember this from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Every season looks completely different here. They say four distinct seasons, and it's true. And there's something that sort of feeds the soul with the environment around you constantly changing and switching. I love that. We found good friends here.
Yeah.
You know, the restaurants, I think there's a few that were around, and I think they've gotten a lot better. And there's a interesting kind of diversity of all kinds from people who've been in Arkansas forever. And then like us, a bunch of transplants from all over the world.
Sure.
And then, you know, you've got up the street, we've got the Rogers Bentonville thing happening with the malls and all that, you know, there's construction cranes everywhere. And so that kind of energy is fun. Then we trickle back down to our nice little Fayetteville, you know, in the hills, and we love it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I do hear several locals, people that have been here for a long time. And, I don't know how long is long, but long enough, I do hear some lamenting of, oh, I kind of wish things were back the way they used to be. And, you know, I think it's any place is going to grow. It's almost inevitable. We grow as human beings. I mean, we're not the same people. You're not the same person you were 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not the same person I was 10 years ago when I moved here. I think we have to be comfortable with some of the uncomfortable aspects of growth. We sit in a university town, so on the one hand, where we're excited to be in a place where there is a lot of education, there is a lot of intellectual stimulation, mm-hmm. you know, there's inevitable growth that comes with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one, you know, those are some of the challenges that we sometimes face. But, you know, I think, you know, you have to figure out how you can have your cake and eat it too.
Right.
And kind of deal with the good and the bad and kind of work through it because it's not the end of the world. And I think I see a lot of potential here in Northwest Arkansas, in this region, that for what has been for the longest time and still is to a lot of people, a flyover state,
mm-hmm.
you know, a flyover place. It's like, oh, you're in the heartland. Oh, that's cute. I'm going from New York to LA or LA to New York or LA to Boston or New York to Seattle.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not really interested, but I think that's kind of the mistake that a lot of people make because there's a lot happening here. And it continues to create new opportunities for people to really take advantage of it.
There's that mixed emotion we have when we make the top three, top five places in the country to live. And we're so proud.
Yeah.
But it's almost like we wish it was one of those Snapchat images that disappears after 24 hours.
Yeah.
Not too many people find out about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I say that as being one of the people who dropped in here.
But of course.
Yeah. The growth has been. And I talk to people who lived here again from way back. And the change is incredible. So. And just from the past 20 years, we've seen this place just explode. It's been really interesting.
Even with the pandemic, it's exploded. I mean, I've seen I got here at the end of 2014 and I'm like, this place is a lot different. I just wish I had bought more real estate when I first moved here. But that's a conversation for another day.
Right.
So listen, let's talk about, you know, the graphic design program at the U of A, because I know that's something that you're very proud of mm-hmm. and that you've kind of had been able to put your thumbprint on this program in some ways. I'd love for you just to kind of, for our listeners, just to give them a better understanding of what's actually happening in that beautiful white building over there.
Yeah, graphic,
you know, because I think some cool things are happening over there.
Oh, for sure. And graphic design has been at the university in some form for a long, long time. My predecessor, Marilyn Nelson, and her husband, Larry, Larry Swartwood, were the kind of people who really got it up and running in a form that was really good. And then when I came in 2005, we started to make some changes to it and it got bigger and more students. And at some point, I guess in the mid 2000, what would it be? The mid teens? What do you call it? The 20,
yeah,
between
the
2010
2010s. And
yeah. In there, it started to really grow. The whole department started to grow. And we had that amazing infusion of funds from the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Sure.
I forget the exact date, maybe 2016, 17, whenever that was.
Okay.
And a lot of people in our school had worked so hard on that, such as Jeannie Hewlin and people, Todd Shields, who's gone on to Arkansas State. But that amount of money that came in really funded the incredible growth. It's one of the largest donations of money ever given to an arts organization, I think in a university, maybe in the United States ever, I've heard. So you hear these words a lot, transformational growth, but that really was. And so along with that growth, I think we hired something like 40 or 50 faculty members, which wow. is unheard of. So when Marilyn and Larry had stepped out to move on to other things for a semester, I was the only graphic design professor. And now I think we have 9
okay.
just in graphic design. And we've created a new Bachelor of Fine Arts in graphic design degree that launched in 2016. And then we have the Master of Design degree in communication design, which is 2 or 3 years old. So we're graduating students into a field that's been really welcoming and needy and full of positions. Students can leave with our degree and go out and make, you know, good money and advance up through the ranks of graphic design agencies. And so moving to the new building, though, has been just a new experience to go. The old building was nice. It had some historical kind of qualities to it. It's been refurbished recently. And the new building just allows us to have a much bigger student body. I think we have 100 in graphic design, 100 students, and then 12 or 14 in the graduate degree.
So, I would imagine that recruiting for this program is not as hard as it maybe used to be.
It's true. They're coming from further afield, the okay. students. It's hard to get into now. We'll have 60 to 70 or more applicants for 30 or 32 spots. So it's selective. It's hard to get into. Parents actually like that it's selective, because before we knew to take everybody, it was yeah. sort of a different feel. So it's hard to get into. It's a rigorous, you know, 3 years once you're in after you go through the freshman year. And the training that's received is up to date. You know, there is AI happening where it yeah. makes sense here and there from certain faculty who are embracing it. But we also do, you know, sort of 17th century style letterpress and brand identity, web development, kind of everything in between. Typography, which is one of the things I love. We have 3 classes in learning how to use type.
Yeah.
So prepares them really well for the graphic design field. User experience design is huge, even in this area, with all the apps and the way people experience screens and what screens they need to go through to make decisions and buy things and sign up for things and all that. So it's a great program now. It's exciting. And the new building just makes it even better.
Yeah. How do you find it here in this area in terms of, as you prepare students for the industry as a whole, are you finding that Northwest Arkansas has been a welcoming playground in terms of creating new opportunities for these kids to, once they've matriculated through the program, they don't have to leave Northwest Arkansas. They can work right here.
Right. I have been here so long that a lot of the students who graduated years ago are now in positions of leadership at a lot of the firms and the agencies around here. And or I've gotten to be friends with a lot of people. So I have some really good connections. All the faculty do have good connections with the professional practice in the area. And they're more and more welcoming of our students. And the further our program matures, it's even better, because we sort of send the students out for internships and yeah. they get jobs pretty well. And the pay is good. And it's one of those creative fields where there's an entire industry kind of waiting for the graduates. And so that's a nice feeling. One of my favorite things is getting students placed in firms and agencies around the country,
that's
especially
awesome.
Here.
Yeah. And I imagine, I mean, at the time of recording this, we're just coming off a graduation weekend. So there's a lot of kids mm-hmm. that are just putting their foot out there now with everything that's happening. So it's interesting to see how that continues to grow. You talked a little bit about AI, how that is impacting and how teachers are. Are you finding it that each teacher is kind of embracing AI in their own different way, as yeah. opposed to having just kind of something from on high come down and say, this is how we must use AI?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, nobody on high at any level above us really knows what to say right now.
Of course. Yeah.
But there are people that are completely embracing it on the faculty and others much less so. I'm trying to figure it out myself. But yeah, so the students will come out of the program having used AI in various parts of the design process where it makes sense. And it's a sort of a catch-22. You know, yeah. I don't want people to hear that we're just sort of churning out projects with AI. But I also don't want people to hear we're not using it at all.
Yeah.
We're using it where it may make sense.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
some of our faculty are really good with it. I'm not yet. So I'm kind of waiting.
And is that kind of across the board, kind of the same with it, all the other programs at this at the university?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I hear people allowing papers to be written with AI as long as, you know, then for the second step, the person, the student goes in and edits what AI had written or vice versa. And I don't know. I feel like every time I ask someone to explain the benefits of AI to me, I'm always kind of like, yeah, but, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm showing my age and my, you know, I've always been at the, I love the forefront of technology, but this is the first one where I'm like, it's not just a tool if it's doing it for us.
Exactly.
Your comments on this are going to be, you know, complicated, but.
I'm sure. It's fine. And I think, you know, we're at a place right now where we're still figuring things out. We don't really know.
Yeah.
I do think, though, we could ignore it at our own peril.
Right.
You know, and I think that's the one reality. So when people ask me, what should I do? And I'm like, well, just become aware. I personally spend like a half hour each day studying AI, just understanding how it impacts what I do on a daily basis as a podcaster, as a speaker, as a consultant. There are a lot of things that now I can do as if I'm 10 people, but it's just because I have access to ChatGPT and the proper prompts to ask it to help me with certain things. So it's like, all right, well, hey, if I can maximize that and then focus on the things that I bring the most value to, like what we're doing right now, having this conversation, makes life that much easier.
Yeah, for sure.
It really does.
Yeah. I think what's happening is I'm seeing it intrude into places where I feel like I have spent a lot of time becoming something.
Sure.
And, you know, it's that feeling of people are just sort of dropping in now and writing novels and 20, you know, whatever. And it's coming, you know, that what do they say? AI is not going to replace people, but it's going to replace people who don't use AI or something like that.
Yeah.
I should look that up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely, it's coming whether we like it or not. Like I said, you just got to, I think it's better to be aware than to be unaware, if you will.
Yep.
So I won't say ignorant. I'll just say unaware.
Yep.
So I think that's the most important thing. So what are you most excited about in terms of the future, not just at the program, but here in Northwest Arkansas? I mean, you've got you're slowly getting some kids out of the house like I have and I'm working on now. I've still got one to go. But what are you most excited about in this next phase of your life here in Northwest Arkansas?
Well, that's a good question. We have one more at home and she'll head off to college somewhere. Now, she's a soccer player, so we spent a lot of time on the sideline, which I love.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Played in Germany in the 80s. I loved it.
Yeah.
We spent some time on the White River this weekend, just a couple trip. And going to do more of that.
Yeah.
Talking about some other travel.
Well, and for people that are the uninitiated that are listening to this, maybe there's somebody that's coming about to come here to Northwest Arkansas. Please explain how easy it is just to get in your car and within less than a 90-minute drive, sometimes less than a 60-minute drive, you can be, you know, out in Swiss Family Robinson territory where you're really experiencing nature as it should be.
Oh, what do they call it? The sportsman's paradise in Arkansas.
Yes, exactly.
So, I mean, you've got the buffalo not too far away. You've got lakes around us. We went 2 hours over to Norfolk.
Yeah.
I think it was about 2 hours.
Yeah.
It looks like a different, I mean, it could be Switzerland combined with Guatemala. I mean,
right.
This river and these hills and the mist over the mountains and just, you know, the hills. Amazing. Just beauty. Just right there.
Yeah.
It's
not
far
away.
Yeah.
It's really not that far away. I mean, and you can appreciate it right here. I mean, when you look out, there's a brand new overlook up by Mount Sequoia where the cross is. For of you that are uninitiated, there's a brand new veranda and deck and everything where you can look out and just, I mean, just taking in the Ozarks, there's something about it, you know, and it's one of the reasons why I use the image of the Ozarks in the backdrop of my website, because it's just, there's just something about it. And I love when I drive south on 49 towards Fort Smith before you get to the Bobby Hopper Tunnel and you just have these rolling, gradually rolling hills.
It's beautiful. Just, really.
It really is something nice to see.
When you flip around and come north and there's that one rise you come over and there's the little, you know, village of Fayetteville up on the hills there.
Very cool.
It's amazing.
It is.
Yeah.
It really
I love all of Northwest Arkansas, but I don't feel like any of the other towns of Northwest Arkansas have that sort of experience of coming into them.
Well, and they don't. And also too, because people are always constantly calling, whenever they hear about a tornado hitting Arkansas, I'm just like, yeah, I mean, we do get tornadoes here. Obviously, Rogers got it. Rogers is a lot flatter than Fayetteville.
Yeah.
Fayetteville, one of the benefits of Fayetteville is the topography.
Yeah.
And it makes a huge difference, that topography. It's one of the reasons why the one tornado that we have had in this area came scraped right across North Fayetteville right into Springdale, because Springdale's a lot flatter than Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. Fayetteville, when you look at it, you're like, there are a lot of hills. I can only imagine what it was like in the 1800s.
Right.
When people came here from the east and they were like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
This is really nice. But, you know, it's just, you have a lot of hills. And I don't think people realize how hilly this area is until, like, either you ride your bike or you go on the trail or you experience it that way. And you're just like, oh, yeah, this is definitely different. So,
is it true that 30 some people a day are moving to Northwest Arkansas?
36.
This is the number.
36 okay. Net new people a day. And that was a number that I think several of the chambers have been using, as well as the Northwest Arkansas Council. So there's a lot of people moving. I mean, it's going to continue to happen. And it's hard to explain why, outside of, you know, having one of the largest companies in the world be based here, they doubled down with their brand new, beautiful campus, which is open, I might add, unlike, you know, Apple or some of these other, you can't walk through Apple or Google's campus without being stopped.
Yeah.
And you can easily ride your bike through Walmart's campus.
Yeah.
You can stop and eat if you want now. And it's just,
I took a group of students up there a couple of weeks ago to the new campus.
Yeah.
Because they have a large design team and they're very welcoming of our graduates. And
they do.
So we have a good relationship with them. But yeah, they were competing with the bigger or the other tech companies.
Sure.
So the campus is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's also one of the reasons why they wanted more people to kind of come back to the fold, if you will, because it's like, well, we're going to build this. We want people to appreciate it. So, There's something to be said for that. But man, this has been a really great conversation. I appreciate you kind of sharing your story, and I'm glad we got connected, because I think, again, anytime I can get to talk to an author, that's always cool for me because it's encouraging. So you've encouraged me to get back out there, and I think I may write a little bit today.
Yeah.
But more than that, I'm going to open this book because I love reading a good book. And as I shared with you, I'm reading a few other books right now, but I'm going to have to dive into Lost Letters and really take a look at this.
Yeah.
And I certainly want to encourage folks, if they want to learn more about the graphic design program at the U of A, maybe they have a kid that's thinking about going that route, that, you know, sometimes, you know, the whole idea or concept of a starving artist isn't always the case.
Right.
And I think there are tremendous opportunities for great graphic designers, especially right now more than ever before.
Yeah, for sure. Right.
Yeah.
And we have the other areas of the school too. And there are, in fact, a lot of careers out there for any of the graduates of the School of Art. For sure.
And it can lead to a lot of things. I mean, I tell people, you know, if you saw the Steve Jobs story, you recognized his love and passion for font making and typography.
Uh-huh.
And that actually played into his sensibility around design in general, which has given us, you know, some of the, I mean, a lot of the stuff that Apple puts out even to this day. I mean, yes, I know Johnny Ive has played a major role in that, but the stuff just looks good. Even the packaging looks good. You know what I'm saying? It's rare that you get something like, I still have boxes. I still have iPhone boxes, I'm ashamed to say, on some of my bookcases where I'm like, I don't want to throw this out. It looks so pretty. But a lot of that, I mean, design is just, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, how that impacts society. And something as simple as typography played a major role in how Steve Jobs looked at design. That and the other thing, I mean, just the little stuff, right? Like I think I told somebody the other day, or maybe I was talking on a podcast, where if you open up a MacBook and look inside of it, it's beautiful inside, which is crazy, right?
Right.
And that's kind of one of those stories where Steve Jobs had told the story, and he told it to Walt Isaacson, but it was a famous story that people had heard before, where he was painting a fence at his home. And his father was like, you know, you have to paint the fence on the inside just as well as you paint it on the outside. And at first he was like, well, nobody's going to see it. He's like, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And that left an indelible impression upon him, where he never cut corners when it came to creating something and designing it and designing the whole thing, not just the thing that's visible to the naked eye.
He had an interesting connection with the Cherokee Nation too. Cherokee was one of the early languages available on the Apple devices.
Okay.
And I think I've heard that the Cherokee Nation flew their flag at half mast when he passed away. And so that's an interesting kind of vector to go down and look into.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. There's so much there. So I mean, I think, you know, it is, there's a lot to be learned from people that have gone out and kind of forged their own path.
Right.
Sometimes you just have to look for those breadcrumbs.
Yep. Yep.
To get an idea. So, yeah. But you're leaving your own breadcrumbs with this book, Lost Letters.
Well, I hope you enjoy it. I spent a few years on it. And
yeah, I'm going to put a link to it. It's available on Amazon?
Everywhere you buy books.
Everywhere you buy books.
Yep,
okay, so Pearls and some of these other books.
Oh, locally I am talking to them to get it in.
Okay,
there, yeah.
Okay. Good,
I'd like to do a reading there too.
Shout out to Pearls. You guys need to do that. Two Friends Bookstore up in Bentonville.
Yeah, Underbrush and Rogers.
Yeah, so there's a few. I really like supporting local independent booksellers because I think it's one of the last few things that we have.
No. Can you imagine not being able to, that serendipity of walking down the stacks
and cracking the spine of a book for the first time, you know, it's like, there's nothing like
the smell of it, the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate this gift. This is definitely a good gift and I will be reporting back on my experiences with that. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
I've enjoyed this conversation.
For sure. If anybody wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to connect with you, Tom?
If you just search me up on
search
engines.
You're on LinkedIn too, right?
LinkedIn's people that uses LinkedIn.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Like, I will make sure I put a link to you, your profile on LinkedIn so that that people have that and can connect with you. And we'll put a link to the graphic design program at the U of A.
I spend a lot of time on my Instagram, with the old 80s. But if you want to see some good old 80s mullet pictures and
Germany. What are you on Instagram at? As Tom Hap?
I think it's Tom Hap 88.
88. Okay, we'll put all that in. Well, you're going to fill out a form when we're done with this.
Okay,
so
good.
I'll make sure all that gets included in the show notes. And anybody that has any questions or wants to reach out to you or even wants to buy your book, we would encourage them to do that. But Tom Hapgood, thank you for joining us today on the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. We really appreciate it.
I had a blast. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, there you have it, folks. Another episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. To learn more about us, please visit our website at iamnorthwestarkansas.com. Remember what I said earlier. If you have a guest or somebody that you think would be appropriate for this podcast, they've got a story to tell and you want to give them a platform to do it, our platform is open to do that. Of course, we typically have a lot of people that have already come to us or people that we've gone to ask them to come on the podcast, but we are making a concerted effort in this season now. We're 6 years into this that we want to continue to build upon the momentum that we've built over the last 6 years. We want to go six more years, and we can't do that without your help. So visit our website, click on the About section, and you can click on the link there to submit a potential guest for the podcast, and we'll look at it. No guarantees that they will be on, but if we do choose them, we'll certainly shout you out and thank you for taking the time to fill out that simple form. Remember, our podcast comes out every Monday, rain or shine. You can find us on every major podcasting platform, including YouTube, and we would really appreciate it if you would rate and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts. You know, what they say is sharing is caring, so please give us a good rating. Let us know what you think, or if we need to do something different. And then on top of all that, share this podcast with a friend. I would appreciate it. I'm Randy Wilburn, the host of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast, and we will see you here next week. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes or more information on becoming a guest, visit iamnorthwestarkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
Attention Northwest Arkansas businesses and talent seekers. Introducing Onboard NWA.com, your hyperlocal job board crafted for our unique community. Struggling to find the perfect match for your job openings? Onboard NWA simplifies the hiring process, connecting you with the region's top talent through tailored talent matching solutions. Whether you're an employer seeking expertise or a professional looking for your next opportunity, Onboard NWA is here for you. Discover more at onboardnwa.com and let's build the future of Northwest Arkansas together.